Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Sunday, January the 14th. And as we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We've got a lot to get into tonight, as I seem to always say every Sunday. But the presidency of Donald Trump may very well go down in history as one of the most interesting ever. I just don't know how else to describe it. We had a week that was remarkable. At one point this week, you know, everybody was praising the president for getting together with the members of Congress, and I thought he did a great job that particular television performance. And then, of course, the whole controversy about what he said or didn't say. Now we're finding out, and Bill wrote an article about this today, we're finding out that some of the people in the meeting didn't hear what Senator Durbin heard. So it's just one of those things, you know, what did he say? Why didn't? Or whatever. It's just, and then of course you get the reaction from the press, which is absolutely hysterical. I mean, just absolutely hysterical. So the double standard, and I mean, it's just absolutely hysterical. I think sometimes, whether he meant to do it or not, President Trump, when he does these things, he gets such a reaction that I think at the end everybody says, no, really, Trump cannot be that bad, really. Anyway, it just becomes crazy to watch. The U.S. economy continues to do quite well, and many American workers are getting bonuses and getting new jobs, and new companies are coming in. I'm just beginning to wonder if maybe more people are not talking about that at home than whatever the president may have said in that conversation with Senator Durbin. Bill had a post today about DACA, and I'm glad he did, because I wanted to talk a little bit about DACA myself. I really think I've come to the conclusion that Democrats are not serious about DACA, and we'll get into that with Bill. And then I don't know whatever happened in Hawaii. Maybe Bill can explain that to us. So let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Oh, just fine this evening, Silvio. I want to make certain I'm at my equipment right now. I'm making certain that this entire broadcast is recorded on two separate recorders. So if there's ever any questions about what is said. Senator Durbin is in the room noting everything. Yes. Well, what he's noting every fifth sentence I'm saying, yes. This whole thing, if he said what he said, obviously it was wrong and embarrassing to the United States. But mm-hmm. Now there are people coming forward who were at that meeting who are men of integrity who said that's not what he actually said. Now, mm-hmm. The fact is that Dick Durbin has a history of saying and reporting some pretty inaccurate things. He has had to apologize on the floor of the Senate. Mm-hmm. Apparently many journalists didn't realize that when they reported the story. The president immediately denied actually saying it, but others said, oh, yes, he said it. But I think the question of the week, and this is not original with me, it really comes from Powerline. They said the real question of the week is not whether he said this. Presidents say terrible things all the time. Any historian will tell you that. But the mm-hmm. question of the week is who would want to make something like this public? Dick Durbin knew when he went to the microphone and said this is what the President of the United States said, he would be damaging the interests of this country overseas. Right. There's no way out of that. And you kind of wonder, why would he not care about that? Is embarrassing Trump so important that the national interests of the United States come second? The fact of the matter is, historically, responsible journalists, have mm-hmm. in many respects protected presidents. And they have done so for an entirely good reason, that the president speaks all the time. He has conversations mm-hmm. all the time. Sooner or later, every president is going to say not only one thing, but many things that are regrettable.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
right.
always been an understanding that, well, you know, if it's in a private conversation or if it didn't come out quite right, we'll just put it aside because it is not right if you want to have access to the president to quote every little thing. During
mm-hmm.
World War II, for example, you could not quote President Roosevelt directly at a press conference. And that was a very good rule because, especially in wartime, a president can say something that
right.
Is untoward or could be misunderstood. Other presidents have severely criticized the press. Many presidents have been, as I said, protected. The American people did not know that President Roosevelt, for example, was paralyzed. They knew he had infantile paralysis, but the actual effects were kept very vague. There was also an incident that occurred we'll go back to the Roosevelt administration again, where President Roosevelt sent an emissary to meet with Winston Churchill. As Winston Churchill was rising again in British politics, this was before he became prime minister, and Roosevelt's first question to his emissary when he returned to the White House was, "What is he a drunk?" Now, that imagine if that had been made public. Imagine if someone overheard it, ran to the telephone to call CNN, and that could have destroyed, before it began, the most important personal relationship of the 20th century between Roosevelt and Churchill. You cannot quote everything because you can't have a government run that way.
Right.
Presidents make comments. Other people make comments. It was not reported that Joseph McCarthy, the famous Joe McCarthy, was an alcoholic, which he was.
Mm-hmm.
Many other things weren't reported. We know that Harry Truman cursed like a sailor. We also know that Hillary Clinton curses like a sailor.
Right.
But those things are kind of put aside. You have a situation where if the press doesn't like a president, they are more likely to report those things, but the damage done to the country can be considerable.
Right. And it's interesting because this week that this came out, what my reaction initially was, well, if he said that, that's wrong. I mean, it's stupid, really, to say something like that. But then I sat back for a minute and say, okay, if he said it, fine. But it was a private meeting. He wasn't doing a press conference. It wasn't like he was talking to a bunch of students or something. It was a private conversation between the president and members of Congress. But then what I found interesting, Bill, was the reaction of the media. And you kept seeing in social media people jumping to the conclusion that not only did he say it, but he said it because he's a racist. And I said, this doesn't smell right. I said, there's something wrong here. These people are overreacting. And then, of course, we've heard since that other people in that meeting. We've also, you know, just not too long ago, Bill, President Obama, when referring to the situation in Libya, used the exact same word to refer
exactly right.
to the situation in Libya. And then, ironically, on the same day that this news exploded, Nancy Pelosi had said something about five white guys or something, which she thought she was being funny.
Cute, yeah.
I don't think.
Well, that's the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is all about identity politics.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a meeting, you have to have a certain number of people from this group and that group.
Right.
Yeah, she was talking about the negotiators negotiating DACA, and it was five white guys. And the reason it was five white guys is they were the ones that were most active in the area. But if you're a Democrat, you have to make that observation. You have to count the number of people of this group, of that group. And especially if you are in the Democratic Party today, it is only certain groups that count.
excuse me for interrupting you for a second, Bill, but what if President Trump had said, for example, let's say there was some meeting, the Democrat Party or something, there was some meeting and President Trump had said, well, you know, five black ladies or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would have gotten all over him.
There
would have been all kinds of reaction to that. So it just seems to me that the reaction of the media became, I think, as much a story. I couldn't take CNN for too long. I just saw a little bit of it. But I understand that they were going on like this for three whole days.
Oh, of course.
And they're still probably going on.
Well, that's exactly right. Well, I can watch CNN for a few minutes. I mean, it's kind of like being in a boxing ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can may be able to take it for a few minutes. CNN is an insufferable, corrupt news organization. They've given up all their credibility. And in a case mm-hmm. like this that we're facing now with who do you believe about a meeting, the credibility of journalists becomes that much more important. Now,
mm-hmm.
I can't take anything CNN reports that seriously, but the reality is either he said it or he didn't. Now, if he
mm-hmm.
said it, it was unfortunate, and it was a phrase that is sometimes used just almost, you know, not rather lightly and shouldn't be used lightly. But the fact of the matter is that if he said it, he should be reprimanded for saying it, and then we move
mm-hmm.
on to other business.
Right.
This nonsense about Trump being a racist, he has been a public figure for about 40 years. If
mm-hmm.
he was a racist, we would have known it long before now. We really
right.
would have. And also they tried to gin up this idea when he became president that he was also an anti-Semite and that anti-Semitism has risen in America. Anti-Semitism has been rising in America for about 20 years. Most all of it on the political left, not on the political right.
That's right.
And this is the man who recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital. And he's accused
mm-hmm.
of anti-Semitism? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just nonsensical. I don't think that he is a particularly a prejudiced man in any respect. I mean, he may have certain, you know, feelings about certain cultures. As long as you don't put it into practice, that's kind of the way most human beings are. But I have seen no evidence whatever that he has any animosity toward any group.
Right.
As opposed
and you
to,
know
him.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you know him, having lived in New York. I mean, for me, he was just a businessman. I never really knew him that well before he ran. But you know him from being in New York. Other friends of mine in New York, you know, say the same thing you're saying. Here's a guy who, from what some friends of mine in New York have told me, was extremely generous in charities. The family has always been extremely generous when it comes to charities. Here's a man who donated to Jesse Jackson, a man who donated to the Clinton Foundation, a man who donated to Planned Parenthood. Now, I don't know whether he did that to buy favors, but bottom line is that he did it.
Yeah.
And I've heard, there's a lot of things you can say about Donald Trump. He's obviously, he's not a diplomat. We'll say that much. He has a way of talking that sometimes I find disturbing. That's fine.
Yes.
He obviously has had a very crazy personal life. We can say that. But no one ever said he was a racist. And what bugs me is this idea that you automatically jump to the racist corner and say he's a racist because he said this. Well, what did he say? He was talking about some countries and he used language. Okay, that again, it's not productive language, but he didn't say it so that 10 minutes later he would find out in the press that he said it. So I like to know who's in that room, what journalists were in that room. I think these journalists have a responsibility to confirm whether he said it or not, because if you have senators who never heard it, and then you have Senator Durbin who says, I heard him say that, and Durbin, when he came out, he was pretty vicious in what he said about Trump. I mean, it wasn't you know, he was angry with Trump. There was something was going on. And I have a theory what it is, and we'll get into it when we talk about DACA. But I just think that they were these people are out to get Trump, and Trump's going to have to realize that they're out to get him. And anything
yes.
he says, if it's negative, will be in the media within minutes, Bill.
That's exactly right. And they know the people who are out to get him, they will have a friendly reception in the media.
Well, that's it.
It was pointed out today that if the Democrats take over the House, and I think that is likely, by the way, at this point,
mm-hmm.
it may change down the line, Trump will be impeached. There's no question
mm-hmm.
about it. They will impeach him for dropping a cigarette on the sidewalk, because that is what the most prominent leftists in the party want, and they run the Democratic Party today. Now, whether he would ever be convicted in the Senate is something else, but that will depend on whether the Republican Party collapses politically. If it collapses politically and the Democrats pick up 8 seats or so, that would put them within 7 or 8 seats of an impeachment number, of a removal number. And that's pretty
mm-hmm.
serious stuff. You know, Nixon never got to impeachment. I mean, the urban legend is that Nixon was impeached and then resigned. No, he resigned before he was impeached. He was going to be impeached. First of all, it was a Democratic Congress, and and they don't particularly care whether what they do is constitutional. They believe they are above it all. The Congressional Black Caucus wants him impeached, and they will determine the future of that once the Democrats take over, and we're going to have a real mess. They may not succeed at removing him from office, but they could succeed in so completely disrupting his administration that nothing gets done. And I think also they may very well get a helping hand from Robert Mueller. If Robert Mueller raises legal questions about Trump right before the election, I think that that could be used as a springboard toward an impeachment. We may be meeting a year from today under very, very stressful circumstances, because the new Congress will take over in early January of 2019, and if it's a Democratic Congress, watch out. Anything goes. Anything goes.
Well, what's interesting is that if the Democrats were to take over the House, most of the committees would be run, I would think, by Black Democrats. They seem to be the ones with most seniority.
That's exactly right. And that's fine, as long as the job is done responsibly.
Sure,
but
sure.
It's not going to be done responsibly. It's not a responsible party. I mean, it is basically today not a party that particularly likes this country. It is a party that is the party really in the image of Barack Obama and not the image of Roosevelt, Truman, and Kennedy and the greats of the Democratic Party. It is a party whose national chairman has made speeches using filthy language, and that doesn't seem to bother the press. And
no.
His vice chairman used to be with the Nation of Islam, a hate group.
Right.
And that doesn't seem to bother the press. So we have a very hard situation. And while we have a very creative president, he is creative, and a man who is pursuing many of the right policies, which is reflected in the economy, he's also a loose cannon who has become his own worst enemy and can really create a very disruptive situation in the months ahead.
You know, I was listening, Bill, tying into what you're saying, I was listening to an interview on Friday between Bill Beck, is it Bill Beck? Yeah, Bill Beck and Bill O'Reilly. And
I think
I'm
it's
not
Glenn
a big
Beck.
Fan.
I think
Glenn
it's Glenn
Beck.
Beck
Glenn Beck. And I'm not a huge fan of Glenn Beck. So let me say that up front. But he happened to be interviewing O'Reilly, so I was listening for that reason. And Glenn Beck said something very interesting. He says, I want to defend President Trump, and he's doing a lot of the right things, but it's getting tiresome, or it's just very difficult to continue to carry or to continue to come to his defense when he does things like this. And I'm wondering how many people are thinking that way, that, yes, he's doing the right things, he's pursuing the right things, but these little incidents are just wearing me out. I mean, how many times
– that's true.
How many times
can you
defend somebody?
That's exactly right. And also, you begin to wonder after a while, he knows the press is going to make everything it can out of these incidents. Why do you continue with it? I mean, everyone has said the same thing. This is, again, not original with me. He gets into a period where he's going so well. He got his tax bill through. He was doing well in negotiating with Congress on other issues. His foreign policy was going well, and as soon as he starts to do well, he does something stupid. It's as if it gives him confidence to go back to the real Trump, which is kind of like a Queens real estate salesman. And this is so self-destructive, and that was Nixon's problem, of course. Nixon was a very estimable international politician. He was very knowledgeable. He was very well qualified for the job. He just couldn't control his dark side. You know, I've said many times, if once the Watergate story came out, if he had just come to a microphone and said, I am outraged by what I hear, this occurred on my watch, I have to take responsibility, here are the things I'm doing to make sure this never happens again. Chances are he would have come out of it very, very well. But he started in with that old Nixonian paranoia and tried to cover everything up. He shouldn't have tried to cover anything up. He said, you know, I will not allow this on my watch. You can turn a disaster into a victory by the way you handle it. And he handled everything so badly that basically Nixon was driven from office not because of Watergate. He was driven from office because he was Richard Nixon. You know, had the Watergate incident occurred, while John F. Kennedy was president, it would have been on page 46. And it would have been considered a minor incident done by somebody else. And
right.
Nixon, you know, he had an enemies list, which was itself a somewhat bizarre thing. He understood that people out there in the press and in certain parts of the Washington establishment hated him. So instead of doing his best and to counter their hatred, he kind of encouraged it by some of the things he did and said. And we're having the same situation today.
Well, we really are, and it's unfortunate because he, like I said, he was having such an amazing week. I mean, when he met with the leaders of Congress, everybody was saying, "Wow, what a great moment! He seems to be going in the right direction." And then this happened. Now, in all fairness to President Trump, I think Dick Durbin, Senator Durbin, who, by the way, I just wanted to add this, came out saying how offended people are with chain migration, but just a few years ago, he himself was calling for an end to chain migration. So you have to wonder about Senator Durbin. But
there are no principles in the Democratic Party. It's whatever.
No,
whatever,
and clearly, whatever it takes.
Yeah, they're contradicting themselves over the place.
That's right. That's right. And it's really, but I think you may be right about the House. I'm still hoping that doesn't happen. But if it does happen, it's going to be absolutely horrible. And by the way, before when I just wanted to correct myself when I said that. The leaders of the committees are black Democrats. What I meant to say is that they're black Democrats who are very liberal and anti-Trump. They're not the most responsible blacks in the United States. Unfortunately, a lot of the black congressional leadership is extremely irresponsible, from Maxine Waters. Can you imagine Maxine Waters running a committee? I mean,
always was one of the people who symbolized what an awful member of Congress is. She is
right.
A complete hypocrite and phony. She's benefited enormously personally from her office. She doesn't get anything done for her people and doesn't want to. I mean, one of the great myths is that group leaders want their groups to advance. They may want their groups to advance by a little bit, but never a lot, because if they advance by a lot, they're not going to need those leaders anymore.
Right. No, exactly right. We're going to take a little break, Bill. We're going to listen to one of our sponsors, and then when we come back, we're going to talk more about this rather remarkable week, crazy in many ways, with President Trump and what he said or didn't say. It was just absolutely incredible. And then we're going to talk about DACA in just a few minutes as well. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Sunday, January 14th, as we like to do on Sundays. We're chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. For those who started listening to the show with that incredible game between Minnesota and New Orleans down to the last minute, it turns out the Vikings pulled it out in the last few seconds. So I just got a text from one of my sons saying that the Vikings had pulled it out. So it was quite a game to watch. Were you following any of the games this weekend, Bill?
No.
Yeah.
I have to say.
No. A lot of, listen, I was surprised today. I went to, it's funny, we had lunch after Mass today. We do once a month. We have the Knights of Columbus have a lunch that they do. And I was amazed at the number of guys who I know are big fans who are not following it. And because I asked a couple of guys, who are you rooting for? And they say, oh, I'm not really following it. And, you know, again, I'm not saying it's scientific, but I think it's important when guys that I know, and I didn't really watch the game. I was working on the computer this afternoon. I heard parts of it on the radio, and my son just texted me that the Vikings had won. But I think there's a problem with the NFL. They better look into it in the off season, because this is not something, you know, when you're in business, you don't want your customers to be unhappy, Bill.
That's exactly right. And the problems with the NFL have been handled very badly by the commissioner, who has just gotten himself a fat new contract for doing poor work, which is kind of a symbolic of an organization that's dying. And it is dying.
Right.
I mean, there is a revulsion in the public toward the way the problems have been handled, especially the kneeling during the pledge. They should have been told from the first minute, this league does not belong to you. You are a guest. You're wearing the jersey of an organization. You can do all the kneeling you want on your own time, but not on our time.
Right.
That would have been good. But they started in with giving in and giving in and giving in. And I think it has cost them a lot of goodwill. I don't know. Which teams do you think are going to play in the Super Bowl?
Well, right now, you would have to go with the Patriots. I mean, because it's down to the Patriots and Jacksonville Jaguars in one conference and Minnesota and Philadelphia in the other. My guess is, if I had to bet, it would be Philadelphia and New England in the final, with New England winning again. But the interesting thing about this Jacksonville team, this is the team that went to London and put on quite a show, kneeling.
Yes.
So this is a team that I don't think a lot of people are very happy with. They were the ones they were the ones who went to London and did the unthinkable, which is to take a knee in a foreign country when they're playing the national anthem. And then they stand up for, I guess they call it, God Save the Queen. I think these guys forget something, and I want to talk about Joe DiMaggio in a minute, but Dominic DiMaggio, one of his brothers who played with the Red Sox, one time was being interviewed, and I was listening to the interview on the radio, and Dominic said, you know what, when I was playing, when I put on that uniform, he was playing for the Red Sox, I knew that I was representing that city because it said Boston on the uniform. And I think these guys need to understand that when they wear the Jacksonville uniform or whatever, they're really representing. I know it's a business, and I understand they're making money. I know all of that. Everybody knows that. But it's still a very unusual business. You know, when you buy a product, aspirin or whatever, you're not necessarily, it's not the same thing as the sports. And you better you know as well as anybody what Brooklyn meant to the city of Brooklyn, for example, when you were growing up with the Dodgers.
Sure.
So there's always that. But I wanted to ask you a quick question about Joe DiMaggio. Today is the anniversary of the wedding, DiMaggio, Marilyn Monroe, 1954. And I was reading about it. They were married 274 days. So that may have been one of the shortest marriages ever. But that must have been a big story back then, I assume, in 1954-ville.
It was a huge story. Marilyn Monroe was emerging as the sex symbol of the 50s. Of course, Joe DiMaggio was the Yankee Clipper. I don't know if at that time he was still playing. I think he had just retired because 54, I think he had pretty much just retired.
Yeah, he had
but
retired.
He was a giant of the game. And, of course, he was also a man known to be very traditional in his values. And she was not necessarily traditional. She had done the famous calendar, the now famous calendar. And it was, of course, a publicity man's heaven to have Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe get married. Now, as you said, the marriage didn't last long, which is very sad. It really is. But he always, I think we mentioned this when we talked before the show, he always seemed to have a deep feeling for her. Took care of her grave, had flowers sent to her grave, at regular intervals, even after the divorce. And I think that of her husbands, he was the one who cared for her the most. I don't recall any deep affection expressed by Arthur Miller, the playwright, toward Marilyn Monroe. I think, frankly, he just used her. But DiMaggio seemed quite genuine, and he never tried to exploit her name. He never disparaged her in any way, and I think he conducted himself regarding Marilyn Monroe with great dignity.
Yeah, well, as I understand from his biography, when they were married, he was the bigger name. he was not playing anymore, but when they were married, DiMaggio was the attraction. He was the big name, and she was an up-and-coming star. She was year or so away from some of her big movies.
She did not realize how big he was.
Mm-hmm.
There was a story that he related that Marilyn Monroe used to go as a volunteer, to her great credit, to entertain the troops in Korea. We were fighting the Korean War. Actually, it had just ended, but there were still plenty of American troops in Korea, and she would go over, she would entertain them, and as he told it, she returned on one trip, and she said to him, Joe, you don't know what it's like to be cheered by 50,000 men, And he looked at her and he said, "Yes, I do." And apparently, she didn't have any concept of how renowned a ball player he really was.
Yeah, and that's surprising. Not to dwell on this too much. That's surprising because that she wouldn't know. She wouldn't know that because DiMaggio, you know, was the ball player of his time. I mean, he was the face of baseball all those years, and so I'm surprised she wouldn't know that. But anyway, it didn't turn out to be a happy marriage, but he did treat her well, as you indicated. Well, let's get back into the politics of the day. I think, Bill, one of the reasons that Senator Durbin came out, and this is just pure speculation on my part, but I'm just kind of putting the dots together, as they say. But I think one of the reasons that Durbin was angry with President Trump is because the Democrats, I think, are in a real mess when it comes to DACA. They overpromised. They basically told the DACA supporters, "We're going to fight for you and we'll shut down the government for you." They forgot to tell, though, some of the senators who are up for re-election that they were going to do that, particularly in some of the more difficult re-elections in West Virginia and so on. And I think they're in a real mess. They were hoping that Trump would crack, basically, and they were hoping that the Republican Party would divide itself and accept DACA. But it didn't turn out that way. And I think that's why the Democrats are angry, because they've overpromised when it comes to DACA, Bill.
Oh, they did. Well, the Democratic Party, look, it's, you know, any party that can have as its front runner for 2020 Oprah Winfrey, I mean, you know, and it's being taken seriously, by the way, is a party
right.
in a lot of trouble. You know, this is a party that whose candidate could not beat Donald Trump, who, let's face it, was a very defective candidate for president.
Yes.
And Hillary Clinton didn't even win the white women's vote. And now they're going into the 2018 election, which they may do very well in. But the presidential election of 2020, several people have made the point that they don't even have any prominent candidates. They really don't. It is not a party that has generated a new leadership. The press is filled today with stories, for example, that if the Democratic Party wins the election in 2018 for the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi will be back as Speaker of the House. Nancy
right.
Pelosi barely realizes where she is. I mean,
right.
she has lapses during speeches, and they will not give up their power. It's an embarrassment. It really is. And so you've got a political party that is leaderless, that does not have strong candidates, that has no particular spokeswomen, a party that really is 50 years out of date and is still, grinding out the issues of the 1960s. What can one say about such a party that except that it is, as a party, it is in terrible shape? Even though
right.
it may win.
But that's right. And when you look at DACA in particular, I think that there was enough on the table, enough room to negotiate a solution. And if the Democrats had been willing to make a couple of concessions, such as a border fence or some kind of border security, they could have gotten a deal. And they could have taken care of a big issue for them. But now, of course, they're blaming it on Trump, and Trump is saying no, that it's them. But I think the real problem the Democrats have is with the base, with the Dreamers who they or the base that they told, hey, we're going to shut down the government over this. And I don't think they have enough votes in the Democratic Party to do that, Bill. I mean, I'm not sure Joe Manchin wants to go back to West Virginia and say, yes, I voted to shut down the government over DACA. I don't think that's what Joe Manchin wants to do, Bill.
No, I don't think he does, and I don't think some of the others do. But once again, Trump has handed them the issue on a silver platter by his alleged comment at a meeting, which will dominate the week. The press will get as much as it can out of that alleged comment. And the deadline, of course, is Friday for not shutting down the government. What Trump is saying is absolutely true. He said if the Democrats block the continuation of government, they will be blocking funds to the armed forces, who desperately need those funds right now.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, as the representative of our foreign policy, and second, because the military has basically run out of a lot of money in a lot of areas. So, you know, politics, a week is a lifetime in politics. And what we're saying now about Trump and his blunders, in 2 weeks may not be the story. May not be the story anymore. And I think the Democrats, the smarter Democrats, will realize that while today they are riding high, at least in some polls, they may not be riding high over the summer if they don't come up with good ideas and if the economy continues to build. So
right.
I think you're absolutely right. A lot of Democrats don't want to go home to their constituents and say, yes, I agreed to shut down the government because it is not
right,
a popular
over DACA.
Move.
Over DACA.
Over DACA.
And I think, yeah. And here's the problem that I see, and this is why I don't know what's going to happen in 2018. I mean, a lot of different theories, a lot of different things could happen. But one of the problems that I see with Democrats winning the House, and I mentioned this last week, is the fact that they're going to have to win a lot of seats. They cannot take over the House by just taking over California. That'll help
no.
a lot, yes, but they need a lot more. And if
well,
you're going to make DACA, if you're going to make DACA your issue, then I don't know how well that plays outside of metropolitan areas that they're going to have to win. And that's my whole point. To me, a smart Democrat would have said, okay, we got DACA. Yes, we're going to have to do some border security. Yes, we're going to have to accept this, but we got DACA. And then we don't have to talk about DACA anymore. Now we can move on to something else and let the Republicans fight among themselves as to whether or not they gave up too much to get DACA. That's what a smart Democrat would have done, I think, Bill. But now what they've done is that they've said, no, unless you give us a clean bill, we're not going to fight for DACA. Well, a clean bill never had a chance. A clean bill is completely unrealistic. If there was an up and down vote on DACA today, just on DACA period, it would fail, Bill. It wouldn't get out of the House. It wouldn't get the 60 votes in the Senate. So, you know, asking for a clean bill is just completely unrealistic. But if I'm a smart Democrat, I look at anything I can get on DACA and I say, hey, I got DACA. Now let's get that off the table. But no, they it seems like they want to fight over DACA. And to me, that's a loser for them, Bill. I really do.
Well, I hope you're right. But it's, there are trends in politics. And sometimes the trends overcome the issues. We've seen
mm-hmm,
that happen
sure.
many times before. And I think the trend, at least according to the polls, is right now with the Democrats in terms of
sure.
Control of Congress. According to the Quinnipiac poll, they're 17 points ahead in the
yes.
generic vote. Now, that may be inaccurate. That sounds like an awful lot of numbers, especially with the economy doing so well. And, you know, it's I think we are heading for one of the bitterest periods that I've seen in American politics. The Democrats will stop at nothing, and the Republicans, to be perfectly blunt about it, are not all that enthusiastic about their leader. I mean, you don't
mm-hmm.
hear people in Congress saying, "I'm madly for Trump." I think
right.
that virtually all the Republicans in Congress would much prefer to have Mike Pence as president than Donald Trump. Who came into office, after all, insulting most of the Republican leaders. And, you know, if there is, for example, a move toward impeachment, will we have Republicans in the Senate defending Trump? Or will there be a delegation to the White House saying you have no possibility of winning because your own party is against you? I think the drama of this period is going to be absolutely enormous and will dwarf Watergate by the time the period is over.
Right, and then of course and we may be talking about this next Sunday night or on a Sunday night sometime in the first quarter of 2018, and that is other scandals have come into the picture too, like the scandal with the dossier or whatever that is that supposedly was taken to FISA. I mean, if that turns out to be true, that's a huge scandal on the other side that could
yeah.
actually hurt the Democrats.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's only a huge scandal if it's reported.
Well, that's true. That you're exactly
yeah.
right
and,
about
and
that.
You, and you have a press that is feeling its oats, that does not believe in really reporting the news. They believe in reporting the news that they want to report for their point of view. And, you know, the press has always built itself up as an institution that is holding government accountable, that is, that it's standing between the people and the government. But the reality is, if an institution is powerful enough to do that and to save a democracy, it is powerful enough to destroy a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And many people don't realize it. A corrupt press can destroy the country.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. No doubt about that whatsoever. I just, you know, my only sense about 2018 is that I still think this is a long game. I mean, there's a lot of game ahead, as they say in sports. There's a lot of innings ahead. And
yeah.
I just think that there could be some surprises. And I personally, and again, this is just me looking at the landscape down here from Texas, looking at the landscape, I'm still not convinced that Democrats can put up candidates that can win many of these districts that they have to win. I could be dead wrong. I mean, I could be 100% wrong. But I just think that that's going to be their challenge. And when you have Tom Perez as your chairman and you've got Nancy Pelosi and White, and you're not exactly, you know, you don't exactly have the kind of leadership that I think is going to win a lot of elections in Missouri and North Carolina. I'll just kind of put it that way. And we'll, you know, we'll see what happens. So that's my only feeling is, and if the economy continues to improve, of course, that would help Trump, particularly in some of these Senate races. The other thing, too, is, as I said, it's these Democrats are so – I don't know how in the world you can have a political party where the chairman is Tom Perez and the vice chairman is this guy Ellison.
Absolutely.
20 years ago, that would have been the Twilight Zone, Bill. I mean, that would have been an episode of the Twilight Zone, people like that running a party.
Well, you know, you can have it when the press suppresses it.
Yeah.
In other words, most Americans are not aware of who Keith Ellison is. If 20 years ago somebody would say that the vice chairman of the Democratic Party is a former spokesman for the Nation of Islam, I mean, it would be a national scandal. But today, you only have a scandal if it gets reported. And that's a lesson the Democrats have learned, that they could keep things with their political power and their influence in the Democratic Party, they can keep things out of the paper. The scandal of the coverage of Barack Obama was not what was reported, but what wasn't reported. His entire background, his whole history, his real ideology. If there's no story there, if the people are not aware of the facts, then there's no scandal.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. I think the media has been awfully irresponsible. We're going to take a little break. We're going to do one more segment with Bill after this, but right now we're going to hear from some of our sponsors here at Blog Talk Radio, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, talking with our good friend Bill Katz in New York, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We've been talking about the president's rather exciting week, to say the least. And we're going to talk a little bit about the American economy right now and what happened in Hawaii, where, you know, I have no idea what happened in Hawaii, but it must have been pretty scary for the people there in Hawaii. Bill, how's the weather in New York? I didn't ask you up at the top.
Well, it's actually not bad. It's cold. It got cold again. It was very warm for a few days. I mean, it was really up to the point where Al Gore was celebrating. He was here, you know, celebrating. He was running around in a bikini saying, you see how warm it is? And now it's gotten very cold again, but it's supposed to warm up again at the end of the week.
Great. Well, that's we're in the exact opposite. I mean, we've been unusually cold down here, and it's supposed to get down to 18 on Tuesday morning. So that's somewhat unusual for us. For us here in Texas, but the American economy seems to be doing quite well, Bill, and from what I understand, potentially going to get a lot better. You have bonuses that are going out to people, and I'm sitting, you know, I keep thinking to myself, I wonder how many Americans are focused on those bonuses and maybe some of those new economic news versus all the stuff about what Trump said or didn't say, Bill. I mean, I think sometimes what is being reported in the media is not necessarily what people are talking about or caring in their homes, Bill. I think sometimes there's a disconnect there. I think you would agree with that.
Oh, yes. Oh, well, of course there is. Yes, that's absolutely true. And look, you know, many of the things that Trump said about Washington and the media are absolutely accurate. I mean, there is an American establishment. They want him out of office. There is an establishment in the press. They want him out of office. And, you know, we are going to be asking a lot of questions in the next few years about the question of democracy. Who really runs the country? You know, President Kennedy said the power is out there. In other words, he didn't feel he had that much power as president. I think that there are elements now who really see an opportunity to literally have a permanent government in Washington. And, you know, it will involve a coalition of groups. It will not necessarily involve the national interest. But I think they see this as a route forward. And I think the deterioration of American journalism has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. Now, the American economy, there's a debate as to why, you know, the economy is doing better. And naturally, the reaction is somewhat partisan. But it does seem to me, at least looking at it from my angle, that some of the decisions that President Trump made, deregulating the economy, focusing more on the private sector, I think that has given the economy the confidence that it needed to do well. The real test right now, of course, is how well is the economy going to do in the next 10 months or so now that there's tax reform? I think it's going to do very well, Bill. I think come September, August, September, we'll be talking about a very vibrant American economy. I really do. And the Democrats are in the incredible situation. Not one of them voted for this, which is pretty incredible, Bill.
Well, you know, you're at a period of enormous partisanship. Not that this has not happened before. I mean, you know, because of the nature of journalism today, most journalists don't think there was any history before 2 weeks ago. You know, they really don't. But we've had periods of intense partisanship before in the 1960s. Also, you've had periods of great political reversals at a time when you would least expect them. You know, many people forget that Winston Churchill was thrown out of office at the time of his highest glory. And they forget the fact that in 1942, less than a year after Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt suffered enormous losses in the midterm congressional election, even though he was the leader of the commander-in-chief of an army at war and an army that was fighting back. And so, you know, politics can be very irrational. It can be very emotional, and it can be easily misread. One of the things we don't do at Urgent Agenda is we don't predict the future. You know, we try to avoid predictions. We also try to avoid stories with the word may in them. You know, this may happen, that may not happen. And so, I don't want to get into the predictions business. And I don't think you really can predict. You know, as you said, maybe the Democrats will not be able to win in some of these races that they feel they now have a chance. But remember that an enormous number of Republican congressmen are not running for re-election.
And that's
a big problem because they were in situations where they had won those districts. Now, it is true that many of the ones who are resigning are committee chairmen who are term limited. They would go back to being ordinary members of Congress, and they just don't want to do that. But the Republicans are in trouble, and they are going to have to learn one basic rule of politics, and that is if you have the press against you, you take that as your most serious issue, and you go around the press. That is what Truman did in 1948 with the famous whistle stop campaign. That is what Ronald Reagan did. One of Reagan's greatest political skills was his ability to talk above the heads of the press directly to the American people. And Republicans aren't good at it. They just aren't good at it, and they have to get better. Now, ironically, that is one of Trump's great strengths. He speaks directly to the American people, but the trouble is if he keeps on making a fool of himself, that's going to turn out to be a negative rather than a positive.
Well, again, I go back to what I said before, the remark by Glenn Beck the other night that I heard on the radio. I mean, how much energy do you have to keep defending him? At some point, I think many Republicans are going to say, you know what, we'd rather have Pence, because we know at least Pence is not going to say these things and put us in this kind of situation.
Well, you know,
Bill, before we look...
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, before we look at next week, I wanted to know if you have any idea of what happened in Hawaii. I mean, I don't think that has ever happened before in American history where an entire state was under a nuclear attack or a threat of nuclear attack. I mean, that's pretty scary. I mean, that's not a big state, but it's a lot of people.
Well, it's scary no matter what the size of the state. And
sure.
The idea that a mistake like that could be made indicates a level of incompetence that is breathtaking. I mean, you would think if they're running a drill that they would have all the locks on in place to make sure this didn't happen. And they say the guy who did it is being retrained. I would hope so. Or maybe he's being trained
so.
Maybe he's being trained for the first time. You know, it's a state function. It's a state agency, although there have been some celebrities who try to blame Trump for it. But the fact of the matter is that this went on for 38 minutes without them realizing. The first time they realized that the mistake was being made is that somebody looked at a cell phone and realized this message was out there. This is incompetence of the highest order. The FCC is looking into it, the Federal Communications Commission. The reaction of the Hawaii government was, well, people are going to be retrained. It's very weak, very, very weak. While I don't think there was any risk of going to war as a result of this mistake, there certainly was a risk of people being hurt, injured, or even killed in a panic that almost ensued. It was almost like the War of the Worlds broadcast by Orson Welles in the late 1930s, very similar to that.
Right.
And there has to be a complete investigation. And I think there should be an investigation by Congress, even though it was done by a state. I think there's a sufficient federal interest in this that Congress should investigate it and find out exactly how something like this went wrong.
Yeah, it is really amazing. I mean, when I heard about it, I could not believe that something like this had happened. It just seems like, something out of, again, the Twilight Zone. I've brought that up a couple of times already tonight. I mean, this is really, really crazy. Well, let's look at next week. I'm guessing we'll be talking about what he said or didn't say. That'll be a big deal. DACA should be a big deal. And the government shutdown is just a few days away, Bill.
That's right. There will be a number of things that are coming up. The government shutdown, clearly, the deadline for the government to be kept open is Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he said about what the president said will continue. The fact is the story may actually escalate, especially if Republicans feel they can go after Durbin and prove that what he said was wrong. It could embarrass the news media, which, of course, would be terrific for the president. I think there are other stories that are beginning to creep up on us, and that is that the North Koreans and the South Koreans are talking, and obviously they're talking because of the enormity of the pressure that Trump put on North Korea, but we have to follow that those talks closely because they may not go anywhere. If they're not, we're going to be right back where we started from, and we might be right back where we started from in February when the Olympics will be held in South Korea. And that's coming up fast, and that's going to be a major political story as well as a sports story.
Yes. I thought I would share with you, Bill, just very quickly, that there was going back to Hawaii for a second, the governor of Hawaii sent out a message to the citizens saying, on behalf of the state of Hawaii, I deeply apologize for this false alert that created stress, anxiety, and fear of a crisis in our residents and guests. Interesting way to put it. Maybe he should resign. Maybe that would be a lot better.
Well, it should have been a much stronger statement.
Yes.
It sounded like the statement of a guy who runs a resort, which, of course, he does.
Yes.
You know? I mean, let's face it.
It's like, gee,
you know,
I'm sorry the air conditioning wasn't working.
That's exactly.
We apologize for any difficulties.
The pool will be ready tomorrow morning.
That's sorry that the pool, that the water wasn't clean in the pool last night, and I'm sorry if that spoiled your honeymoon or something like that. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. But that's a state run by the Democrats, so at least
they can't blame it
on Trump. Yeah, they can't blame it on Trump. Well, Bill, I want to thank you as always for your time, and it should be a very exciting time when we get together next Sunday, because I think this is going to be, I hate to say it, but I think next week is going to be more exciting than the last week. This is really going to be a big week. I think it's going to be a huge
week.
It
will be, and people will be out of their holiday mood, and they'll be back in the political mood. And yes, I think we are in for a very, very bumpy ride.
I think this next week is going to be extremely dangerous, and the possibility of a shutdown, I think, is probably a good one. But we'll see. We'll see what else Senator Durbin has to say this week. I've never liked that guy. There's something weird about him I've never liked. It's not just because he's a Democrat, but he's weird.
Well, you know, it's interesting. He used to work for Paul Douglas, as did I, and as a young man, he was very well regarded. But for some reason, as he rose in the ranks, as you say, he's become stranger and stranger in his statements and his views. He was really in line to become a leader of the Democrats in the Senate, but they chose Schumer instead. And I he didn't resist it. He didn't fight it. And I've always wondered why he didn't fight it. There might be something in his background or something that he was afraid would come out. But I would not be shocked if Trump barred him from the White House.
Well, I just felt the way he came out talking about what happened, it seemed like there was a lot of vengeance in what he was doing. It wasn't just, well, yeah, the president said this, but I'm sure he didn't. I mean, it seemed like he really wanted to get at Trump with that statement. And it was almost very personal between the two men. And that, I think, is bad for the country. When politics gets that personal between politicians, I don't think that's good for the country, Bill.
No, it's not. It's not at all, and this incident damaged the country.
Absolutely. Oh, did it ever. It's been the news story all over the world. You know, it's like,
right.
How dare you speak this way about our country?
That's
well,
right.
That's, you know, I can understand why countries react that way, by the way. I mean, look, if somebody said something about your family, somebody said something about your son, or your family, you're going to defend it. So I understand that part. Have a great week, Bill. Don't get too cold or too warm. And if you see Al Gore, please say hello to him.
I will certainly say hello and give him a new bathing suit.
That's okay.
Okay. Talk
Thank
to you,
you
next
for your
week.
Time, as always, Bill. Thank you so much.
Great.
Always a lot of fun chatting with our friend Bill Katz on Sunday nights. The time always flies when we talk to Bill, and here we are. The time has flown by again. Thank you so much for listening, folks. Have a wonderful evening. And if you didn't hear it, the Vikings pulled it out. They won in the last few seconds. So it's Minnesota and Philadelphia and Jacksonville and New England next weekend. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.